Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in southern New Jersey, earned a Bachelor of Arts degree from Rutgers, and an MBA from Drexel University. Since 2003, he's been the executive producer of the Mitch Albom Show, and he's the producer of Ernie, which is a tribute to the life of the late, great Ernie Harwell. His latest initiative is the 11th annual Say Detroit Radiothon, which will be held on December 8th and will be broadcast live on WJR AM 760 from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. from the Somerset Collection. His name, Mark Rosie Rosenthal. And I'm Jack Rizzullo, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rizzullo, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're with Mark Rosie Rosenthal, a behind-the-scenes angel for our community and our state. Yeah, Rosie, it's an honor to have you.
Honor to be here, Jack. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's go back to southern New Jersey, outside Philly. Talk about your childhood, your mom and your dad.
Okay. I had a very normal childhood. I'm the youngest of
what
three.
What happened, Rosie?
Where did it go wrong? Yes. I'm the youngest of three children. My father was a mechanical engineer. My mom was a legal secretary, but for the most part, she was mom and being at home most of the time until I reached, the 10th grade, and then she went back to work. And it was a very, middle-class kind of upbringing, nice community. Mitch and I kind of grew up in the same community. And our families were very close in that community. And Mitch's sister, actually, was the first album representative that I met. She was in my class. Mitch is 2 years younger than me. And that's how we kind of came to be from the old neighborhood. But it was really a very normal upbringing. And I'm very happy with that that it turned out that way, Jack.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
The biggest thing I learned from mom is don't take any crap from anybody. That was number one. Number two, my dad had a terrific sense of humor. They actually both had a terrific sense of humor. My dad had a wonderful sense of humor. And I think I picked up his work ethic by just observing him in his daily work life.
All right, you've been carrying Mitch for 50 years.
Yeah.
You're in high school, and there were eight of you that got together to form the Lucky Tiger Grease Stick Band. You were the drummer. Mitch was the piano player?
Yes, he was.
Talk about the eight guys.
The eight guys, we were all friends from a youth group. And back to Mitch's sister, she was president of this particular youth group. She needed a program because every week or every month there was a program after the meeting. She didn't happen to have a program for that particular month. She asked her little brother, Mitch, hey, what can we do for a program? Mitch said, I have a really good idea. And that's how the band formed. It was eight people that are still alive today that we keep in touch with. And that kind of formed during the years of the movie American Graffiti, mid-70s.
Now, I think in 2008, you guys had a reunion in the same house.
We did. We had a reunion for Mitch's 50th birthday. And we drove by his old house, and we kind of were looking at the house, and people came out like, hey, what are you looking at? And Mitch said, hey, I used to live here. Long story short, by the time we were finished, they were going to give us their house for the weekend. All we had to do was replace the carpeting that had gotten a flood in their basement, and we were all set. So we were like reliving our childhood during that particular weekend.
All right, from 1998 to 2015, you were the owner of Mark Rose Music and Entertainment, and also the minority owner of the Lead Dog Incorporated. Talk about that chapter.
That chapter of my life. Well, I've always sung my entire life. And I led my dance band it was private function work, so weddings and milestone events and things like that for over four decades. That was my full-time endeavor. As you said, I have an MBA in accounting. I haven't practiced one day of accounting in my life, and I'm most proud of that fact, Jack. But the truth of the matter is that, singing was my passion. I made it my vocation, and I did that for many, many years. And many of my clients were kind of high-profile clients who had corporate entities that would have like a 2 to 3 to 5 day kind of gathering, a conference or a meeting. And they said, hey, can you help us out with that meeting? And of course, I said, hey, no problem. Be really, you know, easy for me to do. Yuck. And I walked out of the room, turned around, and I'm a very quick learner, Jack. I learned that trade really quickly, and thus Lead Dog came to be as a special events meeting planning company.
All right. Mitch Albom, what was he like as a kid?
Mitch Albom as a kid is exactly the way he is today. Okay? I think Mitch is very focused, very intense in terms of, you know, wanting to get it right, even with the band. Okay? You know, it was a fun thing for us, all of us, including Mitch. But Mitch was a very direct band leader, so to speak, in terms of wanting to get it right and get it as right as we could get it. And he was very adamant about that. And so I think what you're observing today probably was really evident when we were growing up together.
I've had him on a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Mitch, you've been on ESPN, the sports reporters. You've been the number one sports columnist 13 times by the AP. You know, Tuesdays with Maury, the number one memoirs, 600 songs, plays. How do you do it all? He says, well, Jack, I only do one thing. I tell stories.
That's right.
And boy, he is a world-class storyteller. How did he get to be such a great storyteller?
I think if Mitch were sitting here and you asked him that, I think the answer is very simple. The dinner table around his house and the holiday tables around his house brought together wonderful storytellers, including his Uncle Eddie, which really was the main character for the five people you meet in heaven. He would tell the best stories. All the kids would, you know, disperse, go play amongst themselves. But Mitch would sit at that table and hear these stories told as only they could be told by relatives. And I think that's where he really got that kind of talent, or really honed that talent growing up.
All right. You've known him for 50 years. What's amazed you the most about Mitch Albom?
Great question. What amazes me most is that he is a very, very loyal person. Once you become friends with Mitch, he's a very loyal person, and he kind of counts on that loyalty going through life. And I think that's a wonderful trait. You know, it's not a negative. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think just everything, all the success that he's had throughout his life and his career, he's kept, I think, a very even keel in terms of his persona and dealing with that kind of celebrity or success. And I think he's really kept it pretty well in check as he's gone through life.
Speaking of stories, is there one story you could share with us about him?
I'm going to probably have to come back to you on this one, Jay.
Okay. All right. You've carried him for decades. You've been the wind beneath Mitch Albom's wings. What's that been like?
It's been an incredible adventure. No 2 days are ever alike, Jack, in my work life with Mitch. And I relish that. That's really just great. It's every day's a new challenge. And meeting those challenges and exceeding those challenges is a great kind of euphoria for me. It really is, because, as I said, you know, I basically, you know, was a band leader my whole life. And Mitch's wife thought it was a great idea when his producer was leaving the radio show that, hey, call, you know, get in touch with Rosie. He'd really be great. He's very organized, all that kind of stuff. And I remember I still have the letters. Mitch, I'm really flattered. This won't work out. I know nothing about radio, nothing about producing. He said, no problem. I'll teach you everything you need to know. I was kind of like, fresh meat for him, so to speak. But he was right. He was a terrific teacher. He taught me everything I needed to know. And then he kind of learned my other skill set in terms of special events and organizing things and things like that. And he tapped into it. And to his credit, he kind of gave me the mantle to move forward in terms of running what I call, you know, Mitch World. You know, the things that he does so well and the things we're able to do so well together. So
we're talking to Rosie, Mark Rosenthal. And what he does for Mitch Albom is what Ed McMahon did for Johnny Carson. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula. We're with Rosie, Mark Rosenthal. Let's go back to 2006. Mm-hmm. We had the Super Bowl here in town. Mm-hmm. Remember, the weather was awful that Saturday and Sunday.
Bitter,
unbelievable.
Bitter cold.
And what Roger Penske did for that city was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He spent millions of his own money.
Mitch and Roger rode together around the city discussing what needed to be done for the city to kind of dress it up.
Yep. All right. But Mitch wanted to do something, so you guys start Say Detroit.
Yeah. Well, I'll use the Super Bowl as the jumping off point. Mitch got wind that the city of Detroit was going to throw a Super Bowl party for its homeless population. Yeah. What does that mean? Basically gathering up all the people off the street before that weekend so the tourists that were coming in for the Super Bowl wouldn't be subjected to, you know, panhandlers and things like that on the street. And Mitch thought this was terrible to kind of, you know, first of all, what is a Super Bowl party for the homeless? Because what was going to happen, Jack, is they were going to throw these people back onto the street on Monday. So Mitch went down to a homeless shelter, thanks to our dear friend, Dr. Chad Audi of the DRMM, to experience what it's like to be a homeless person and going through the whole shelter experience. He goes down there, gets his towel, gets his bar of soap, waiting in line for dinner. And there's a guy in front of him, turns around, looks Mitch up and down, and says, "Hey, aren't you Mitch Albom?" Mitch says, "Yes, I am." He said, "So what happened to you?" Now, you know, people will laugh at that, but that was a very seminal moment for Mitch. That very moment, that very phrase, because all of us maybe are a step or two away from being where that person was online getting that evening meal. He didn't expect to be on that line. Chances are that person may have been dishing out the meal a year or two before, and now he's in line. And Mitch wrote a column about the experience, kind of like what it's like to be given something and then having taken away, you know, right after a weekend. And he wrote a column, and Mitch figured out it would take about $60,000 to keep that population in the warming centers until that bitter cold changed to something, you know, March or April, to be something a little bit warmer, then they could go back out on the streets. $60,000 would do the trick. People started sending in $5, $10, $20. Instead of $60,000 for Mitch's column, they ended up with $360,000. And now Mitch is saying, what do I do with this money? To his credit, he connected with Chad Audi, and that's when we first started serving the homeless population in the city here. But that's how Say Detroit came to be. Say Detroit stands for super all year instead of super for just one weekend. That was the jumping off point of Say Detroit. And it'll be 17 years come the beginning of this year, 2023. And we have over a dozen programs under that umbrella of Say Detroit.
All right, let's talk about a couple of them. The Detroit Family Health Clinic.
Yes. That clinic came about because it was for homeless mothers and their kids. Homeless mothers and their kids, if a child got sick, they would go to an emergency room, okay? The possibility of having your kids taken away from you in the emergency room because you didn't have a permanent address was a very valid worry. So consequently, homeless moms didn't take their kids to the emergency room. So if a kid had an upper respiratory ailment, which normally would be, you know, knocked out 3 to 5 days of treatment, would linger for 2 to 3 weeks. Homeless kids go to school. They would miss school as a result of that. Thus came about the Say Detroit Family Medical Clinic for homeless mothers and children. No questions asked, free medical care, free prescriptions, and now we've opened it up to men as well. So it's homeless men, women, and children.
All right. The Detroit Play Center at Lipke Park.
Yes, our Say Play Center. Mayor Duggan is a big fan of ours in terms of what we do in our charity work, and he thought with Mitch's background, it would be a really good idea to open up this rec center, which had been shuttered during the Big administration. All these rec centers were shuttered. You know, come 3 o'clock, boom. There was no place to go for these kids after school. So we looked at about 24 properties, you know, around the city. This particular property, if you've seen it, is kind of surrounded by a nice neighborhood, a caring neighborhood. It's 15 acres. And we decided to open up this rec center to repurpose it in a way to be an educational enrichment center, an after-school program that kids from all around the city, not just the east side, could come to and go into our educational center there for one-on-one tutoring, mentoring, social emotional learning, and then after that they could avail themselves of the state-of-the-art facilities that we built with the help of Matthew Stafford, with the help of the Tigers, with the help of the Pistons. And if you were not into sports, there were other programs that were available to them, such as a recording studio that they could learn recording engineering or performance, dance classes, graphic arts, things of that nature that they could participate in after they went in for the hour to hour and a half of the educational portion of that.
You've never gotten $1 from any federal, state, or municipal entity. You mentioned Matthew Stafford. Let's talk about Matthew and Kelly Stafford.
Sure.
They gave $1 million to start that center, and then they left town.
That's right. They gave us $1 million in part to build the Matthew Stafford football field there, which is, by the way, an NFL synthetic field. But part of that donation also goes to the programming at Say Play. When they left the city, they wanted to leave a legacy because obviously they felt that Detroit was and is their home. They got married here. They raised a family here. Kelly had some medical challenges here.
Brain cancer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to basically leave that, you know, kind of like how they found it, you know, and they said to us, you know, what can we do? And as I said, that Say Play Center is 15 acres, but we're literally running out of space in the actual building. So we're looking to build an educational annex. So thanks to Kelly and Matthew Stafford and Friends, as it would be called, because it was kind of a matching challenge as well, we are about to put shovel in the ground at that location to a nearly a 20,000 square foot educational annex, which will really be a game changer in terms of the population we can serve there and the programming we can offer there.
If you want to learn more, www.saydetroit.org. What's amazed you, Rosie, the most about Say Detroit these past 17 years?
I think the most amazing thing about Say Detroit is that when we see a challenge or a problem in front of us, we come up with a practical solution. Perfect example is our Working Homes, Working Families program. This is a program where we get abandoned homes through the land bank for the most part. We take them, renovate them, and then give them to a homeless family. If they pay the taxes, the insurance, maintain the house for 2 years, we give them the deed to the house. Now, Detroit, my numbers may be a little bit off, Jack, but has over 100,000 abandoned homes and buildings in the city. So why not take those buildings, those homes, renovate them, match them up with families that have never had a home or perhaps had a home, fell upon bad luck, and are in need of a home. So, yeah, I think that's the most amazing thing about Say Detroit. It's a very practical approach. We're not about a handout. We're mostly about a hand up to someone that has stumbled, that has fallen, that we're trying to raise back up.
People that are listening to Rosie and say, this guy's better than Mitch Albom. All right. You're like the Lou Gehrig, and he's the George Pip, remember, that took a day off, and Lou Gehrig, the rest is history. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rosie about the 11th annual Say Detroit Radiothon, which is coming up next week. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasul, and we're with Mark Rosie Rosenthal, who's been the executive producer of the Mitch Albom Show since 2003. Next week, Rosie, the 11th annual Say Detroit Radiothon will be held on December 8th. Will be broadcast live on JR AM 760 for 15 hours.
15
from
6
a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Somerset Collection,
yeah.
The north side. Tell us about that history and how it's come.
Good. Well, I can't believe, first of all, it's our 11th annual. The joke with Mitch and myself is that people, when they see us coming, would run the other way because invariably we'd be asking them for something.
So rather, you used to ask us for $5, $10, you know, in the last segment.
So we thought it'd be a really good idea, Jack, that we just did this one-day fundraiser, an annual fundraiser, that we could really just raise all the funds we need for our programming for Say Detroit. And we're very excited about it. The Somerset Collection have been a wonderful partner with us. As you know, the holiday spirit out there at that time of year is just amazing, and we kind of tap into that. And it's a real celebratory kind of environment. You know, we have celebrities that come on with us, a lot of Mitch's friends from Hugh Jackman, J.K. Simmons,
Jane Pauley.
Yeah. Hoda Kotb, people like that, Paul Stanley, and of course local celebrities as well that come out to the Somerset Collection to be with us, and it's a wonderful opportunity for people to learn about Say Detroit. The people that benefit from our fundraising that day will be guests with us on the show as well. So it's very heartfelt, very heartwarming, and it's a lot of fun. You know, in the 15 hours, believe it or not, goes really, really quickly. And so we love doing it, and we look forward to that annual kind of celebratory kind of event.
In those first 10 years, you've raised over $10 million.
Yep.
Last year, you raised $1,650,840. Mm-hmm. We going to top it next week?
We aim to top it every year, Jack. So we will top that.
All right. Can you give us, speaking of topping it, can you give us a sneak preview of two or three special experiences?
Okay. Be my pleasure. So I just got off the phone with the Lions today. Why? Because they're always, whenever they win, they call out to me. No, I'm kidding. They are giving us a couple of tickets for the January 1st game with the Bears. But it's not only tickets, but it's also a sideline pass. So I think that's kind of a cool experiential thing. I don't know how many people have been on the sideline of a football game. That's one item. We have a round of golf on the south course of Oakland Hills, which is always a nice kind of incentive item. Mitch, as you know, goes to Haiti every month. So he is offering to take up to four people with him to Haiti to spend, so we call it the 36-hour tour at the orphanage. And it's an incredible experience, which I think will, you know, be really appealing to a lot of people. We have a two-night stay with breakfast, of course, at the Grand Hotel on Mackinac. So those are some of the big-ticket items. But, of course, you also have signed items, you know, from sports teams and Matthew Stafford, even though he's on the Rams, will add to that pile as well. So there's a lot of opportunity for people to bid on items and get items for their generosity throughout the day.
We're talking to Rosie, Mark Rosenthal, who's a behind-the-scenes angel for our community. Another angel for Say Detroit is a man named Tom Gores.
Tom Gores, yes. Incredible guy. The owner of the Pistons. Has become
when you guys call him at the end of the show.
Well, you know what? We always reserve that last 8 minutes of the show because that is Tom Gores' spot. And he comes up with these amazing kind of challenges to us. Yeah, he'll donate a good sizable amount of money. But part of the monies that he donates is really to incentivize our kids out at Say Play. He's really adopted that play center as his own, you know, and it really gives them the ability to do entrepreneurial kind of things, whether it be opening up a T-shirt business or coming up the year before last, he came up with a challenge that he wanted our kids to vet like-minded organizations, charitable organizations, which the funding that he gave could be donated to those organizations. And they vetted organizations and awarded four different charitable organizations at the end of the process. So it really instills in our kids, a sense of ownership, whether it be giving to charity or creating a business that they can be proud of and in terms of self-esteem and all that. Tom comes up with these things. I don't know where he comes up with them. He's just a really amazing guy that way and a real asset, I think, to our community.
I believe the last couple of years he's given us $250,000
yeah.
a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, we're talking to Rosie, Mark Rosenthal. Since 2006, he's been the chief operating officer of the Mitch Album Charities. In 2020, Mitch reached out to a man named Daryl Woods. I've said one of the 10 best guests I've ever had on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Daryl, after this show, you're now one of the 11th best. Okay,
you're
I love
sweet.
You like a brother, but we got to be honest.
You're
okay.
sweet.
And the two of them started better together. Daryl Woods had spent 29 years in prison for first-degree murder that he did not commit.
That's right.
First, Tell us about Daryl Woods.
Daryl Woods. Well, with our relationship with the mayor, I contacted the mayor because, remember, 2020 was the summer of George Floyd. Tensions around the country, I don't have to tell you what they were. And we thought it'd be a really good idea to somehow tamp down that tension that was permeating the rest of the country, you know, lower the temperature, so to speak. And Mitch came up with this idea. He said, Rosie, anytime we've had an issue or a conflict, it always got resolved around a dinner table. I said, okay. He said, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to do something where we're bringing together law enforcement people, at-risk youth and adults, community activists, to have a conversation, to have a discussion. No one knows who each other is. Let's do it that way. And I thought, well, I need somebody to really be like the leader of this program. So I contacted the mayor's office. I said, I need someone who's really connected to communities, really grassroots. They said, you need to get in touch with Daryl Woods. Who's Daryl Woods? Literally, this is during COVID. I stood outside his apartment. We talked to each other, you know, 6 feet apart, had a conversation, connected with him. As you know, when you meet Daryl, you connect with him immediately. And now for 2.5 years, he has been the spearheading this effort with Better Together. We do all over the region, and it's been very, very effective. We're now taking it into the school systems. The program used to be called Scared Straight. We call it now Cared Straight, that we involve school children in this kind of Better Together dialogue all together around a table, eating together and breaking bread together.
The man spent 29 years in prison for first-degree murder he did not commit. He doesn't have an ounce of bitterness in his body.
Forgiveness is all over him.
Yes. He says things like, the difference between wellness and illness is the we versus the I. When we sit down, God will stand up. When we shut up, God will speak up. Huh. And when we get out of the way, God will have his way. And then you guys reached out to another angel, a giant of an angel, Jack Aronson, Annette, and their kids. How did you use them for Better Together?
Well, Jack, I don't have to tell you about Jack. He was a giant in many, many ways with his philanthropy, his friendship, his mentorship. For me in particular, I mean, I just miss him terribly. We lost a real incredible person. The very first Better Together, Jack, obviously has a food background, Garden Fresh and all that, brought out what I'll call a smoker. It looked like a locomotive, okay? It was this big. But the bottom line is that Jack and his family provide all the food stuffs for these gatherings that we've done now for the last 2.5 years. And it's just, a fitting tribute to Jack and Annette and their family, that they're involved with us in terms of doing this kind of good, bringing communities together and bringing within those communities the elements that at times perhaps may have been, you know, butting heads, or there might have existed a bit of tension, but are able to really be the foundation for us in doing these kinds of programs that really bring together the community. So
if you want to learn more, www.saydetroit.org. Also, www.mitchalbumradiothon.com. We're talking to Rosie, Mark Rosenthal. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR.
Rasula, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Rosie, Mark Rosenthal. Grew up in southern Jersey outside Philly. Rosie, you guys are masters at not answering questions. So I'm going to ask you again. Give us one story about Mitch.
Good question, Jack. I think people that read Mitch's column, read his books, hear him on the radio every day, know of Mitch's heart, his generosity. But I would like to speak to the extent of that, because I don't think a lot of people know that. A perfect example, the kids that we have in Haiti who qualify to come up here for college. We have an arrangement with the MCA, the Michigan Colleges Alliance, which provide scholarship money for these kids to come to schools in Michigan. We've now had 8 kids. The scholarships that are provided really don't cover the entire cost of college for these kids. And Mitch basically reaches into his pocket to make up that difference. He would be the first to say he's very blessed and more than happy to do that. But I think just as a parent or a parental kind of guide for these kids, Mitch is unbelievable. He and his wife, Janine, provide that tender, loving parental care for these kids that come up here. And I just don't think many people know about that, from having Sunday dinners every Sunday with these kids, going out to the schools, spending time with them. I think people would be probably not surprised, but they would really appreciate knowing all that Mitch does for these kids and just the size of his heart. So thank you for that question.
Let's go back to January 12th, 2010. The earthquake in Haiti.
Yep.
The worst in 200 years, magnitude 7.0. Estimated 350,000 people died. And he starts Have Faith Haiti Mission and Orphanage.
Yeah. We had gotten a call at the station here from a pastor in Garden City who was running an orphanage down in Haiti. And the news reports coming out of Haiti was kind of really, there was mixed messages. People weren't sure what was going on down there. We weren't sure if medicine and food that supposedly this pastor had sent down there had gotten down to the orphanage. We got on a plane with this pastor and went down to see what had gone on 2 weeks after that earthquake. Jack, I've never been in a war zone. It was the most devastation I'd ever been a part of and seen and witnessed. Pancake buildings, the stench of dead bodies that hadn't been taken out of the buildings, people walking around injured, limbs missing, just bleeding, all of that. This is 2 weeks after. Came upon this orphanage, and it was pretty evident that these kids were not being well taken care of down there. Long story short regarding that is that the pastor was having a lot of difficulties financially. The kids were not even getting rice and beans. It was either just rice or beans. And the pastor came to Mitch and said, look, I cannot run this. Would you consider taking over the orphanage? And Mitch, with his background, obviously, in terms of charity work up in Detroit, said, sure, I'll do it. Why not? That's how it started. And Have Faith Haiti Mission started from that very day forward, taking care of the kids that were there at that orphanage. And now we've had the great pleasure of moving this past fall up to another location, which has mango trees, you know, just acreage of beautiful grass and just nature around them, versus what was the original orphanage was really next to a waste disposal site. So a lot of great progress has been made there. These kids don't get adopted. These kids really become, you know, Mitch's kids, our kids down there. And now we have 60 kids down there. These are kids that have been abandoned, that have been left to die, that have really been saved, in a sense, by our efforts down there.
Mitch's sister, Karen Nesser, a psychologist and an educator, she's been the one that basically runs the school.
Yes.
Mitch has gone every month.
Yep.
For the last 13 years, 13 times 12, that's over 150 trips, 3-4 days each month that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
You've gone many times. He's brought kids up here. What's the biggest thing these Haitian orphans have taught you these past 13 years?
Oh, that's easy. The word is joy. Sheer joy. These kids have nothing, Jack. All their possessions literally fit in a 12-inch by 12-inch cubicle. And yet every night at 7 o'clock, they do what is called devotion, just offering praise to God, song of thanks to God for their very being, for their very existence, singing at the top of their lungs, okay? They are not influenced by, you know, what kids around here might be influenced by, whether it's, you know, computer, internet, devices, things like that. They have none of that down there. So it's just pure joy, pure childhood is kind of what emanates out of each and one of every one of these kids.
Speaking of joy, Chica Jean.
Mm. Yeah, well, Chica was someone who literally lived through that earthquake in 2010. Okay, 3 days old. The house around her collapsed. She was really just sleeping on banana leaves around her house down there. And she was brought to the orphanage at 3 years old, or maybe 3.5 years old. She was just the boss of everyone down there, told everybody what to do, where to go. But she was just a huge personality, lovable personality. You know, everybody just fell in love with her. And then one day, Mitch got a call from our director down there saying that Chica's face was drooping. And they went to the doctor, and I believe the doctor gave her eye drops for a drooping face when it really turned out to be a terrible disease, DIPG, which, you know, is a four-letter word for death. There's no cure for this. Those of us around here know Chad from Chad Tough. Chad suffered the same illness as well.
Lloyd Carr's.
Yeah, grandson.
Grandson.
So basically, Mitch brought Chica up here thinking that, you know, go to University of Michigan, they'll diagnose it, knock it out. She'll be able to go back. She never went back to Haiti. And that's what started a 2-year journey. Mitch literally traveling around the world with his wife, Janine, to try to find a cure, experimental treatment, anything that would try to defeat this devastating disease. Wasn't successful, but what it taught Mitch after a 2-year journey, what he had been given was a family. He doesn't have kids of his own. Obviously has the kids down at the orphanage, but Chica really became a family with her, and it was a touching story.
She was a blessing for Miss Janine.
Yep.
You're a blessing for all of us, Rosie. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.